Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. Tonight's program is presented in partnership with the Lafayette Library and Learning Center's Glenn Seaborg Learning Consortium. You can find the club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. I'm Josh Richman, politics and legal affairs reporter for the Oakland Tribune and Bay Area News Group, and your moderator for tonight's program. Tonight's program will focus on the issue of guns in public, particularly related to so-called open carry laws in numerous communities in California as well as across the country. The subject of gun ownership in America has never been more hotly debated than it is today. In 2008, the Supreme Court ruled against a sweeping ban on handguns in Washington, D.C., and affirmed an individual's right to self-defense and gun ownership. Numerous analysts believe that this year, the High Court might be poised to overturn Chicago's strictest in the nation handgun ban. In a majority of states, law-abiding citizens may already openly carry a loaded handgun with no license or permit required. In much of California, it is legal to openly carry firearms as long as they are unloaded and visible. Here in the Bay Area, in such suburban communities as Walnut Creek and Antioch, open carry groups have been congregating at different locations to demonstrate their right to carry unloaded, unconcealed firearms in public. Opponents have come out en masse to protest. There is now a proposed bill in California that would make it a misdemeanor to openly carry an unloaded handgun in specified public areas. This bill has just recently been approved by the California Assembly and will now make its way to the California Senate. As California and the nation struggle with what's right constitutionally and morally, today's program will delve into these issues. Should people be allowed to carry guns in public places? Does it matter if they're loaded or unloaded? Is this a justifiable assertion of Second Amendment rights or a potential disaster waiting to happen? Should open carry be the law of the land? Our panelists are Chao Chang, Press Secretary for the Responsible Citizens of California, a nonprofit organization that promotes, educates, and advocates for the right to carry, which includes both open carry and shall-issue concealed carry. Karen Arntzen is the California Chapter Services Coordinator for the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Karen has been active in the gun violence prevention movement for over a decade. A mother of three daughters, she helped organize the Contra Costa Million Mom March chapter, now the Contra Costa Brady Campaign chapter, where she served as chapter co-president. She went to work for the Brady Campaign in 2007 after retiring from a 28-year career in public affairs with the U.S. Navy and a Bay Area water district. Adnan Shahab is the Republican nominee for State Assembly in the 20th Assembly District, an open carry advocate, and an active member of the Bay Area's open carry movement. He is a resident of California his entire life. Raised in Fremont, he was valedictorian of Washington High School in 1996. He then went on to UC Berkeley, where he graduated at the top of his undergraduate class at the Haas School of Business. Adnan is working to educate the public and law enforcement about the laws pertaining to open carry. He wants law-abiding citizens to be aware of their right to carry to protect themselves and to be able to retain the right to decide for themselves whether they want to carry a firearm for personal protection. And Lori Saldana, California Assembly member and author of Assembly Bill 1934, which would make it a misdemeanor to openly carry an unloaded handgun in specified public areas. Assemblymember Saldana is the representative for the 76th District in San Diego. She is now in her third term in the California legislature and serves as Speaker Pro Tem in the State Assembly. Please welcome our panelists. So, Assemblywoman, perhaps we could start with you. If you could give us a quick overview of why you felt AB 1934 was necessary and the current status of the bill.
All right. Well, thank you, Josh, and thank you, everyone who is here this evening I think it reflects the importance of the discussion we are going to have. I introduced the bill after hearing complaints from law enforcement and citizens in my district in San Diego about people who were openly carrying guns on a boardwalk along the beach in the summertime when many families were there for recreation. And what was happening is people were concerned to see people openly carrying guns. They had no way of knowing that they were using them they had no way of knowing if they were loaded, unloaded, and police would be called. And the police would have to contact the person carrying the gun, inspect it, verify that it wasn't loaded. And it turns out they cannot ask for identification. They cannot verify the person is the legal registered owner of a gun. They cannot inspect the serial number, determine that it hasn't been used in a crime. And so a lot of questions arose about what the purpose was for people to be openly carrying a gun in a recreation area. And I actually had law enforcement tell me that they were devoting a considerable amount of time keeping an eye on the open carry people, because once word got out with certain gangs in San Diego that they did not have loaded guns, they themselves became shadowed by people who wanted to take their guns away. And the police were literally following people down the boardwalk, keeping an eye on them to make sure they did not become victims of crime themselves. So in a time when we are laying off police officers, cutting back on public services, and talking law enforcement around the state, I realize that this is really not a time, and we've seen an increase in the last few years of people openly carrying guns. I really believe, and law enforcement around the state believes, that this is creating an increasing cost and an increasing hazard for public safety in California. That's why I've introduced the bill.
And the current status of the bill?
It is going to the Senate Public Safety Committee next week.
Okay. Mr. Shahab, why don't you explain briefly why it is that you believe that the rationale for this bill is unfounded?
Well, the rationale behind the bill is that open carries are somehow posing some sort of danger to society, that they're scaring people or they're taking up resources. With regards to the scaring people issue, there have been numerous court cases that say that the mere fear is not enough to take away a person's right. Going back to the case in the 1960s during the Civil Rights Act of 1964, one of the arguments that people made was they didn't want to hire black people because they claimed that black people scare customers. And we know that's absolutely ridiculous. So to say that people shouldn't be able to carry firearms because people are irrationally afraid of them, that's not the proper way to do things. The proper response would be to educate people that firearms are simply a tool, and they don't attack people. We need to teach people to act responsibly. And with regards to the issue of taking up law enforcement, this might have been the situation last summer. But I know up here in the Bay Area over the last 6 months, we've done an excellent job educating law enforcement as well as the general public about the legality of open carry. I personally have been contacted by many law enforcement agencies. I helped make a training video for the San Jose Police Department so they can tell their officers how to interact with open carriers. And in fact, it's gone to the point now where dispatchers know how to properly respond to a call of a person with a gun. Just last week, we were out here in Lafayette, and you know, most people, they understand that open carry is legal, so they don't freak out or anything like that. But the few people that did call into law enforcement did a good job, and they told them, you know, these people are doing absolutely nothing wrong. They're not acting in an irrational manner. They're not going to dedicate resources to deal with somebody who's not breaking the law. So AB 1934 would only serve to take away the right of a law-abiding citizen to carry a firearm for personal protection and basically leave law-abiding citizens as easy targets for criminal behavior.
Ms. Arnson, on the public safety aspects of this.
Well, Josh, is this on?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. Last December, the California Brady Campaign responded swiftly to media reports of open carry meetup events in restaurants in the Bay Area by contacting the restaurant managers and their corporate headquarters. We alerted them about the planned meetups and asked them to declare a no-guns policy to prevent the meetups from taking place. Among others, two major chains, Pete's Coffee and California Pizza Kitchen, responded immediately by posting no guns policies on their websites, citing concerns for the safety of their customers. We were surprised when Starbucks tried to duck the issue by claiming they had to allow guns on the premises because it was not against the law. Of course, they have private property rights and can prohibit bare feet, smoking, pets, and other inappropriate behaviors in their stores. They also have a no-guns policy for their employees, so their refusal is both a nonsensical double standard and socially irresponsible. Displaying a lethal weapon in public, if it is not your job, is irresponsible and reckless.
It is a provocative act of intimidation. The Brady campaign and partnered with Credo to launch a nationwide petition in February to persuade Starbucks to put public safety first and exercise their private property rights to do what was best for the community. After delivering 33,000 petitions to Starbucks headquarters in Seattle, the Brady campaign announced a national poll conducted by Lake Research Partners just last month. The poll shows that the majority of Americans, 56%, want Starbucks to adopt a no-guns policy. Overall, the poll shows more Americans feel unsafe knowing people can carry guns openly in public than feel safer. And recent incidents are bearing out these facts, as the public is now taking a second look at perpetrators to see if they are involved in the open carry movement. Just last month, an open carry advocate shot two men in Milwaukee, turned himself in, and declared it self-defense. In Arkansas, an open carry advocate and his 16-year-old son opened fire with AK-47 assault rifles during a traffic stop and killed two police officers and injured two others before they were killed. The open carrying of firearms intimidates the public, wastes law enforcement resources, and creates opportunities for injury and death due to the accidental or intentional use of firearms.
Okay. Mr. Chang, why now? It seems like we didn't hear a lot about open carry until relatively recently, even though this law has been on the books for quite some time. What has precipitated this? These gatherings, these demonstrations?
For the longest time, I believe that citizens of here in California have been holding back on expressing or exercising their gun rights as guaranteed by the Second Amendment. California is one of the most restrictive states and has some of the most restrictive gun control laws in the entire country. You know, as of this very moment, there are 40 states here in the U.S. that allow for shall issue concealed carry, meaning that if you are a common law abiding citizen and you've got no, you know, felonious criminal record, they are mandated to give you a concealed carry permit in 40 states in our United States. In 43 of our states, we have open carry, meaning that any common law-abiding citizen who wishes to can go ahead and openly carry a firearm. It's only in Wisconsin and here in California that we have to do so unloaded. So this is actually a very, very common practice that is being exercised over the rest of the country, and we're just participating with that here in California as well. Now, as far as like the responsible citizens of California goes, we stand behind the fact that armed, common, law-abiding citizens are responsible, we're well-trained, and actively reduce the violent crime rate in society. We also seek to dispel the common myths and misconceptions that the non-gun-owning public may hold in regards to their concerns on the subject of a lawfully armed citizenry. Okay, our primary goal is to educate the general public regarding the facts about the right to carry and gun control in general. So our primary objective is to secure legislation necessary in the state of California to protect open carry and secure shall-issue concealed carry for all future generations of Californians to come.
You have a quick something to add, Mr. Shaw?
Yeah, I just want to jump in real quick on why open carry all of a sudden is becoming something in the Bay Area. Quite honestly, I never knew it even was legal. I mean, I'd also heard stories even going back to high school that you can carry a firearm. But I was always told you can't carry ammunition with you. And at that point, there's no reason to do it. It's more of a demonstration. And that's one of the things that people are saying, that open carries do it as because we want to demonstrate or protest or show off our ability to do so. And that's not the truth. Most people open carry because they want to be able to carry a firearm for personal protection. The fact that when I found out that I can carry ammunition, that was the game changer. Because all of a sudden, it now gives me that ability to protect myself. So it was only when I found out that it was legal at the end of 2009, mm-hmm. that's when I spent a good month researching the issue, finding out what was legal, and that's when this all began in the Bay Area.
Let's actually turn to some of the audience questions here, because I think that there's actually several questions along the same lines which pertain to what you just said. Put simply, what is the point of wearing a gun in public? Do you expect that there will be a need to use it? And if so, will that not add to the potential chaos and danger of the situation? Another person put it, is this right to open carry more about personal safety, or is it more about an anti-government sentiment? Another person put it, what good really does an unloaded gun do? Can you really load it fast enough to defend yourself when necessary?
Well,
Mr. Shahab, and then Assemblywoman.
Thank you.
I'll speak personally for this. I'm a fan of concealed carry. I have concealed carry permits issued to me from other states. Right now, as of this moment, I can carry legally concealed in 32 states. California, the state that I was born and raised in and that I live in, doesn't feel that my life is important enough to be able to defend myself with a concealed carry permit. As a result, open carry is the only legal means that I have to protect myself. So for me, it's not about showing off or, you know, trying to intimidate people or make a statement. It's about having a tool at my disposal, and that's something that we need to get clear here. A firearm is not evil on its own. It's a tool with which a person can use to defend themselves, and that's why I do it.
Okay. Assemblywoman, please address that, but also in combination with that, how does this bill, in light of case law, not violate the individual rights guaranteed by the Second Amendment, and what's the official position of law enforcement on your bill?
Well, the official position of the California Association of Police Chiefs and the Peace Officers Research Association of California is support. They recognize that their officers are dealing with more of these open carry situations and that it is increasingly forcing them to respond. Going back to some of the conditions that are placed in open carry in other states, there are requirements that a person be trained, have the gun registered to them, and provide identification when asked by a law enforcement officer. In California, we have none of those conditions in place. So someone openly carrying a gun, for people to say they are law-abiding citizens, there is no way to verify that. There is no way to verify that a person is not under a restraining order. There is no way to verify that that person has a criminal background. When they are contacted by law enforcement under the current law, there is no way to verify that that person is legally carrying that gun. And so this is increasingly of a concern. And as far as public safety goes, having guns in any situation does one thing. It increases the chances that a gun will be discharged and used. And one of the things, if the gun is not present, there is zero chance that there will be gunfire. And there are many organizations that will tell you, having lost children in crossfires, having pulled into a park to pick up one child and have bullets fly in a situation, that why increase the risk for something unintended like that happening? And bringing a gun into any public situation does one thing. It increases the potential and the risk for that situation to occur.
Mr. Chang.
I'd just like to address what Assemblywoman Saldana has just said. Basically, there's been much research in refereed journals, peer-reviewed academic research studies that has clearly shown that the more you have, the more lawfully armed citizens you have in society, the lower the violent crime rate is in society. So you're not going to have a situation where, a gun being in a potential violent crime is going to escalate the situation. For instance, if you see an openly armed individual, if you're a criminal, by common sense, you're going to take a look at that person and say, that person is probably a hard target. Maybe I should go ahead and move on to a softer target rather than trying to escalate the situation by potentially getting hurt and having to end up in a hospital. And the whole concept has been explored extensively in many, many researched, thoroughly researched academic research journals.
All right. Ms. Arnson?
The Brady Campaign has documented the rise in the open carry movement and correlates it with the election of our first African-American president, the rise of an anti-government backlash to his election, a rise in militias and hate groups, and also in domestic terrorism. So the NRA seeks to normalize the carrying of weapons. They want people to think it's normal to take your gun to church, to take it to the grocery store. They want you to be able to take your gun to school, everywhere you go. And that is the ultimate agenda, and the ultimate agenda is to carry loaded guns anytime, any place, anywhere.
A reminder, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Today we're talking about the growing debate about the right to openly carry guns in public and the laws that already allow this in communities in California as well as across the country. Our panelists are Adnan Shahab, Republican candidate for State Assembly and open carry advocate, Karen Arnson, California Chapter Services Coordinator for the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, Chow Chang, Press Secretary for the Responsible Citizens of California, and Lori Saldana, California State Assembly member and author of AB 1934. Two related questions for the two gentlemen on the panel. Have you personally been in a situation where your gun has protected or saved your life? And are you afraid to be out in public without a gun? Why are you carrying guns in communities like Lafayette? Are there places you would go where you would feel safe enough not to carry a gun? Mr. Chang?
Sure.
We actually carry guns at all of our open carry events in many, many different locations throughout the Bay Area. Lafayette was a location that we openly carried here as part of the Responsible Citizens of California here just this past weekend. But open carry groups have been demonstrating, for instance, in Vallejo, on a beach off of San Francisco. There's been many, many instances where we have been not just to higher income areas such as Walnut Creek and Lafayette, but also to some of the lower income areas. As far as me carrying a gun every day, the city where I live in Dublin, there's a lot of school zones. So actually, whenever I go and have to go and run errands and whatnot, unfortunately, I'm forced not to carry in many instances because I would literally have to lock away my gun in my car, every other block. So it would be completely pointless for me to do so. But in other cities where school zones are not quite as prevalent, then yeah, I do carry quite frequently. And there are certain instances where I would feel that not caring would be okay, but that is an individual right. It's an individual right established by the U.S. Supreme Court through the Heller decision, and that's for every single person to exercise for themselves.
Mr. Shahab, briefly.
Luckily, I've never been the victim of violent crime, and God forbid I never will. But at the same time, we don't get to choose when we want to become victims. Violent crime can happen at any moment, and we need to have the tools available, or we should at least have the choice to have the tools available at our disposal to be able to protect ourselves with if we do ever become, threatened violently. As to where I carry, I live in the city of Fremont. I'm going to continue to carry where I normally go. This, like I said earlier, the open carry, what we do, it's not about demonstrating. It's about being able to go about your daily business and have a tool at your disposal for if your life is ever put in danger. So I'm going to continue to open carry wherever I go. And if I continue to go to what you guys consider to be high affluent areas, fine. If I happen to go to East Palo Alto, that's fine too. I'm not going to decide where I go and where I open carry based on, the people there. I'm going about my daily business, living my life, and I just want that tool available to me.
Ms. Arnson.
I just want to back up to something that Chow said. The Second Amendment does not confer a right to openly carry a firearm in public. The Second Amendment gives somebody the right to have a gun in the home for self-protection. We look at taking a gun into public in the same way that we view the secondhand smoke issue. You have the right to smoke a cigarette, put your own health at risk, but there are laws saying now that you don't have a right to smoke your cigarette in a restaurant or sometimes now even in public parks and all over the place. That is because, can you guarantee that you're going to give somebody cancer with your secondhand smoke? No. But just because there's a risk, a health risk involved for them getting it, can we guarantee that one of these gentlemen will accidentally shoot somebody or that there will be an accident? No. But there's enough evidence that there are risks of accidental shootings with guns, accidents happening, somebody grabbing your gun, to know that by bringing your gun to the restaurant, bringing your gun to the public park where our children are playing, you are extending that risk, that personal risk, out to society and out to the community. So just like the secondhand smoke issue, if you feel that you're safer with a gun in your home, that's fine. But don't put our families at risk by bringing a gun out into the public.
Please. Mr. Chang, briefly.
I'd like to quote verbatim what the Heller versus District of Columbia majority decision is. Quote, Putting all of these textual elements together, we find that they guarantee the individual right to possess and carry weapons in case of confrontation. This meaning is strongly confirmed by the historical background of the Second Amendment. We look to this because it has always been widely understood that the Second Amendment, like the First and Fourth Amendments, codified a pre-existing right. The very text of the Second Amendment implicitly recognizes the pre-existence of the right and declares only that it shall not be infringed.
Mr. Chang, didn't the same decision, though, didn't Justice Scalia, writing for the majority, say that in sum we hold the district's ban on handgun possession in the home violates the Second Amendment, as does its prohibition against rendering any lawful firearm in the home operable for the purpose of immediate self-defense? How does that jibe? It seems like we've got some conflicting language here, because there are people who believe that that decision applied to handguns in the home.
That applies to both handguns in the home and also handguns carried out in public. Okay, so.
Is that your understanding, Assemblywoman?
Heller was very clear that there are circumstances where ownership of guns in a home are allowed. That was what the ruling was in the D.C. versus Heller. Out in public, in places that in California we already restrict them, near schools, courthouses, airports, the U.S. Supreme Court did not identify or did not speak to those restrictions. It was strictly in the home for personal protection.
Can I jump in here real quick?
Real quick.
Basically, let's go back to the California Constitution. Ms. LaDonia, you swore an oath to that. Article 1, Section 1 of the California Constitution protects life, liberty, and the ability to protect property, as well as the ability to pursue and obtain safety. So even if you didn't believe in the Second Amendment on the federal level, you would have to acknowledge that at the state level, at least, the Constitution grants us the right to be able to be safe when we're going about our business.
Well, and it's amazing or gratifying to me that for over 150 years, people have done so in California without openly carrying guns.
That's actually not correct. That is not correct at all. Open carry has been legal in the state for decades. Actually, there was a prohibition that was put on in the 1960s. So actually what you're doing is you're trying to take away the right that's basically been part of California since its inception, and you're trying to pretend like this is a new right that we are trying to put forward. You need to readjust your evaluation of the situation and address the fact that you are taking away personal rights from people.
All right, if I may... If perhaps we could save our applause for the end and give us a little more time to get to all of these wonderful questions that we have here. Can either of the gentlemen here, Mr. Chang, Mr. Shahab, please describe or cite the data that proves the open carrying of firearms prevents crime and makes the public safer? We have had a decline in violent crime rates over recent years, but it almost seems in some ways that you're arguing the proof of a negative in terms of, well, you know, I'm safer because I have not been attacked because I am openly carrying. Mr. Shah.
That's not what I'm arguing at all. I'm arguing that I went many years without ever carrying and never being attacked. But again, like I said earlier, you do not have the choice. You don't have the ability to choose when your life is going to be put in danger. Just because I've been lucky for 32 years doesn't guarantee that I'm going to be safe for the next 32. So again, I want to have the ability to choose rights, liberty, freedom, to choose whether I want to carry a firearm for my personal protection.
Ms. Arntzen, I see some raised eyebrows there.
Well, I would just like to invite people to check out the Legal Community Against Violence's website. They have all the studies cited there. Research shows that it is no more likely to reduce a person's chance of being injured during a crime than various other forms of protective action. And one study suggests that carrying a firearm may actually increase a victim's risk of firearm injury during the commission of a crime. So the self-protection argument is a myth.
Mr. Chang?
It is most definitely not a myth. The studies cited by the Brady Campaign and other anti-gun groups are funded and explicitly where the conclusions are already reached before the studies even conducted. Okay, the studies that I cite and the responsibles of Citizens of California endorse are studies that have been peer-reviewed, for instance, such as the Mauser-Cates study, you know, which has been peer-reviewed. It's been published in the Harvard Journal of Law and Public Policy. You know, on volume 30, number 2, pages 649 to 694. And let me quote you directly from that study. Okay, quote, whether gun availability be viewed as a cause or a mere coincidence, the long-term macrocosmic evidence is that gun ownership spread widely throughout societies consistently correlates with stable or declining murder rates. This pattern simply cannot be squared with the mantra that more guns equals more death and fewer guns equals less. Whether causative or not, the consistent international pattern is that more guns equals less murder and other violent crime. As of 2006, 40 states have adopted laws under which guns become vastly more available to law-abiding, responsible adults, i.e. 3.5 million Americans are legally entitled not just to keep guns in their homes, but to carry concealed handguns with them wherever they go. But this has not resulted in more murder or violent crime in these states. Rather, adoption of these statutes has been followed by a very significant reduction in murder and violence in those states.
Assemblywoman Saldana.
Well, if this were the case, then the governor of Oklahoma would probably have signed a bill recently that would have allowed open carry of loaded guns in his state. The legislature did not overturn that veto, and the governor cited at the time that he was concerned that this would increase the danger to citizens in his state by allowing open carry of guns. Where the research, and I'm not familiar with the research that's been cited, but it seems very clear that the United States leads in handgun deaths. Looking at other countries that have different laws about gun ownership, they have remarkably fewer incidents of homicides as a result of firearms. And recently in San Diego, I was with our Family Justice Center, and they have done research that found that the presence of guns in homes leads to increased domestic violence and homicides with the use of firearms. So guns in general, the presence of guns definitely does have an impact. And at least one governor within the last month has found that increasing the number of guns in public is not in the best interest of the state's public safety goals.
All right. The next question or combination of questions will go to you as well, Assemblywoman. Would providing an ID as a provision would it satisfy you in terms of allowing open carry to continue? That is, if police cannot ask for ID under the current system, how does one know or do police know that the person does not have a record, especially whether they have a history of violent crime?
Well, certainly having identification produced upon request, having evidence of legal ownership, having evidence of training, having all of those things in place would be proper steps along the way to increasing safety. But as many people have pointed out, California is facing a terrific budget shortfall. Our law enforcement agencies are facing terrific challenges to maintain their current operations. And so what we decided is to do something that was relatively simple for them to manage, which is not have to deal with open carry at this time. And if someone wants to develop better terms in the future, they would be welcome to do so.
Mr. Shahab.
I like to point out that when I first heard that Ms. Saldana was considering introducing legislation to ban open carry in the state of California, I did reach out to her office numerous times. I spoke to a number of people in there, and I was told that she would be glad to speak with me about the legislation before she actually introduced it. Unfortunately, I never got called back. So that's an indication to me that, quite frankly, she did not want to have a discussion about possibly an intermediate solution of possibly showing IDs or something like that. She just wanted to outright ban it. With regards to whether you providing ID is something we need to do, I don't see any reason why, as citizens of California, we should be forced to surrender our Fourth Amendment rights, protection against unreasonable search and seize, search of our persons, just because there's a fear that we might possibly be doing something wrong. I mean, this is still America. The Constitution still applies in the state. Whether you believe in the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment does apply.
This actually goes to another one of the questions from the audience, which is that there's a lot of attention paid to the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed, but the well-regulated militia part often doesn't get touched upon. And what about regulation? What about having a well-regulated scheme for this?
Militia is a legal term that defines the people, the citizens of a particular country, the United States, of legal military age, so typically between 17 to 45. Okay, well-regulated means smooth running. It does not mean that it's regulated. If you take a look at the historical context upon which this was, the Second Amendment was written back in the days of our founding fathers, okay, it is a legal term, it's a legal definition, and it's got nothing to do with regulation.
Ms. Arnson?
To me, the well-regulated militia, of course, into the Brady campaign means regulating what they do and the weapons they use and how they do it. The Supreme Court left open the ability for states to regulate, and it did not take the states' rights away for doing that. But really, the bigger picture, I think, is accountability. And the open carry people, you know, you heard Mr. Chang say that we are well-trained, we are law-abiding citizens. The fact that we don't know that, and whether you think that's infringing upon your personal rights, your Fourth Amendment rights, to ask you that, that's a ridiculous argument. We hold our police officers, we hold our law enforcement accountable for everything that they do. Every time they use that weapon, they're accountable to the community, to their organization, to the victims have recourse if it's misused. We don't know anything about the open carry people. We don't know if they have criminal records. We don't know if they say they're well-trained, but that doesn't mean they have emergency police training. That doesn't mean they have they can react in a high-stress situation. We are just expected to take their word for it. So here we hold law enforcement to a very high standard. We videotape everything that they do. We want to an accountability for everything. And open carry people were just supposed to say, okay, we'll take your word for it.
Mr. Shahab.
Again, I'm going to try to keep this brief. I don't want to sound too much like Bill Clinton and start parsing what is. But if you look at Scalia's, what his ruling was in the Heller decision, he clearly went into what a prefatory clause is and what a controlling clause is. So we can settle the militia part of that clause with that. But with regards to accountability, after the fact, if an open carrier acts irresponsibly, they will be held accountable. They will be held accountable to the law, and they will be tried in front of a jury of their peers. And we're not saying that open carry is a carte blanche to be able to fire a weapon anytime that's necessary. We're saying open carry allows us to carry a firearm, and if our government actually believes that our citizens are responsible members, we should be trusted to act in a responsible manner. And if somebody goes too far and steps over that line, then yes, they should be held accountable to the full extent of the law.
Assemblywoman, is this really a matter of public safety in that can we cite any instances in which an open carrier has led to an instance of injury, or is this more a matter of law enforcement resources, as you were saying earlier?
Well, it's really both. We are seeing a spectrum of behavior, starting with what is not a crime, which is carrying a handgun and potentially carrying ammunition separate from that gun. And the spectrum is the gun removed from the holster? Is it brandished in a threatening way? Is it loaded? Is it discharged? Is the person who does those things trained? Are they responsible and accountable? So there is a spectrum. And the question really becomes, from a law enforcement's perspective, do we want to create the potential for this spectrum, for people to move along this spectrum, from carrying a gun to those steps? It is those steps, removing it from the holster, loading it, brandishing it, threatening or intimidating someone, and ultimately discharging that weapon, that then becomes the crime. So to say, has open carry ever been a crime? Well, open carry is not a crime under current California law. Those other activities are, but the starting point on the spectrum is the open carry. And by removing that, by removing people carrying guns that have under current regulations, I tell people, under current regulations, there are no regulations. This is not a regulated practice. They have no need to produce identification. And the gentleman sitting here, the organization exists in nowhere. There is no physical address. There is no board of directors. There is no accountability. And their address on their website is registered out of state in Arizona at a mailbox that hundreds of thousands of websites intentionally hiding from public view use every day. So there is no accountability on behalf of these gentlemen. And if anyone violates a law related to open carry, they will immediately disavow and say they are not part of an open carry organization. And then we're dealing with other types of crimes.
Mr. Shahab, you're itching to reply.
Well, first of all, I'm glad that Ms. Saldana acknowledges that brandishing a firearm is illegal. We agree. Chow and I both agree with that, I'm assuming. And your argument that you want to get rid of open carry as the starting point of this spectrum, Wouldn't the logical conclusion, according to your interpretation, be to ban gun ownership outright? If that was possible, that would be the logical starting point for, for your argument.
That is not my conclusion.
But with regards to responsible citizens of California, I know Chow was introduced as the press secretary for the RCC. I have been an individual open carrier for a while now. I'm one of the first up here in the Bay Area. And actually, I was approached by the RCC a number of weeks ago, and they told me that they liked what I was doing, and they wanted me on board. And a moment ago, it was mentioned that the RCC has no board of directors and no physical address. That's actually incorrect, because I sit on the board of directors for the Responsible Citizens of California. I attend regular meetings at a physical address. So any ideas that you think that we're going to go away, they have
to
go out the window.
Would you like to give us the physical address?
I don't have it at my disposal right now, but afterwards I'd be...
Do you let us know who else is on the board of directors?
No, we have an address right now in San Jose, California. Afterwards, I'd be glad to present to anyone here in the media. I don't have the card on me right now, but it does exist. And I'm not lying to you. If I'm lying to you on this, call me out on it. But it exists.
Okay. I think I already
all
did.
Right. let's keep it all clean and civil here. Ms. Arnson.
Right now, a gang member can open carry if they don't have a felony. And some of them don't. So the fact that these two gentlemen, who are probably upstanding citizens and, very nice people, are... declaring that themselves to be trustworthy, there is no we, there is no group, and they don't know each other's backgrounds. The rest of them don't know each other's backgrounds. They're meeting each other over the internet, so it's an internet love affair with no background check. So the accountability is a huge issue, and that is the risk to public safety.
Mr. Chang.
First of all, we're not meeting each other over the internet, and there's definitely no love affair going on, okay? we're meeting each other, first of all, at these open carry events, and we meet each other in person and actually have a really good time. We're like-minded individuals who like to congregate together and, express our, exercise our Second Amendment rights. Now, Assemblywoman Saldana has mentioned the California budget crisis a number of times, and I'd like to address that myself. During the course of the next year and a half, by the end of 2011, 13,400 convicted felons will be released onto the streets, our streets, the California society, because of California budget cuts. Last year alone, we lost 1,000 police officers because of budget cuts in this state. Is now the time to take away each common law-abiding citizen's ability to defend themselves legally. Okay. Think about this. California already has a higher than national average violent crime rate. We're at 503.8 per 100,000 violent crime rate. The nation has a 454 per 100,000 violent crime rate. Okay. This lower violent crime rate on the national level is based purely because we have 40 states that have shall issue concealed carry and 43 states that have open carry. Okay? Think about this. Is now the time to take away our Second Amendment rights in California?
Here's an interesting question. We'll pose this one first to Ms. Arnson. Is the open carry movement a male versus female issue? Why is it men who want to carry guns in public and typically not women? Why do we see two women versus two men on this panel today?
That's a very good question, and the answer is yes, it's a male versus female issue, and the polls show that out. The poll that the Brady campaign had shows that the on a male versus female strong feelings of feeling that open carry is unsafe, the women are in the high 60% on that. So it is a male versus female issue. I think, and I'm not a psychologist, but I think that women innately or inherently recognize male-dominating behavior. And this kind of behavior is male-dominating behavior. The message is, whether conscious or unconscious, you know, you better do what I say or else. And many men don't feel that way, but women can recognize that. So I think that that may be the reason, but the polls and the statistics show that, yes, women are much more against open carry.
Mr. Shahab.
You know, we are, Ms. Saldana and Ms. Artson, live in this fantasy world where they talk about theory. Chow and I, we're actual open carriers. We go to the events. We see women open carrying. Granted, right now, the numbers might not be equal, but there are definitely women out there that believe in the right to open carry. If anything, a firearm is an ultimate equalizer. If you look at the size of a person, a woman would be able to defend herself very easily from a person of any size with a firearm. So we need to get any sorts of ideas of, you know, women being more, I don't know, cosmopolitan or more refined than men out of our... And let's just start looking at people as people instead of breaking everybody down into demographics. Because I know earlier she mentioned something about people open carrying more after an African-American became president. I'm half Filipino, I'm half Pakistani. I'm no, you know, racist. So I don't like some of the insinuations that you're making there.
Mr. Shahab, on the heels of that, in terms of the gatherings that have been held, somebody asked, if the open carry movement encourages personal protection, as you said before, as a matter of personal public safety, why do advocates meet in large groups in public? Is this a political statement that you're making?
When I was smaller, I had an older brother who collected comic books. He would go to comic book conventions. I collected baseball cards. I would go to baseball card conventions. People who have common interests have a natural tendency to want to gather together and discuss stories. I will tell you, when I first open carried, I was scared. I had spent a good month researching the issue, but I still didn't know what was going to happen if I was going to be open carrying. The fact that my first time I open carried and there were three other open carriers out there with me, I felt a little safer. I wasn't the only one out there. I had some people there to be witnesses if something happened, and quite frankly, we were in it together. So open carry meetups are a good opportunity for people to share stories about what has occurred to them carrying in their individual lives, and it gives an opportunity to for new people to experience what's going on, pick the brains of some of the more experienced people, and you know, have their questions answered so they can feel confident to be able to go forth and carry on an individual basis in their daily lives.
Assemblywoman Saldana.
Well, to carry the analogy of collections, there are many handgun collectors. There are many people who enjoy collecting guns because they like the technology of the weapons, they like the history of the weapons, and it has only been recently that people show up not to compare guns per se, not to do the comic book collection or the other collection as was referenced. They are showing up in public places for a very different purpose. Not to exchange guns because that wouldn't be a proper thing to do out in public. They're there to make a statement. And whereas having a gun, they're saying, equalizes the situation. That's only true if you likewise are carrying a gun. So if you are not carrying a gun and you are out in public and you see someone openly carrying, it is not an equalizing situation. It is an intimidating situation for someone who has no way of knowing what is that person's intent, is that gun loaded, and why are they out here in a place that for most people doesn't appear to require that safety measure.
Mr. Chang, briefly.
So, you know, to address Ms. Saldana's, you know, statement, then if it's a situation
it's
where you...
I'm
sorry?
Thank you.
Assemblywoman Saldana's statement.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Then if in order to address that statement, if you feel intimidated, then I would recommend that you do some research and get some training and, you know, go to the gun range and get yourself familiar with the firearm. And as far as the assertion that men and women, the difference between men and women, is it a you know, men versus women issue? I'll tell you, I don't understand this argument, because I'll tell you, according to our own federal government's Department of Justice National Crime Victimization Survey, you know, Lawrence Southwick, the author, found that women offering no resistance to attack are 2.5 times more likely to be seriously injured than if they were to resist with a gun. Okay, this is our own federal government statistics. This is not something that the pro-gun lobby is making up. This is our own federal government statistic. Okay, you just got to be educated about this and really understand that lawfully armed citizens reduce violent crime.
You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Today we're talking about the growing debate about the right to openly carry guns in public and laws that already allow this in communities in California as well as across the country. Our panelists are Adnan Shahab, Republican candidate for State Assembly and open carry advocate, Karen Arntzen, California Chapter Services Coordinator for the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, Chow Chang, Press Secretary for the Responsible Citizens of California, and Lori Saldana, California State Assembly member and author of AB 1934. Question from the audience. Let's start this one with Mr. Shahab. If even the police misuse of guns, as we're seeing right now in the BART shooting, the Oscar Grant, Johannes Meserle case, is an issue, why should we move toward having more guns in public rather than fewer?
Okay, so in the situation with that BART police officer, he acted inappropriately, and now he's facing the consequences. I mean, from what you're telling me is, if you want to eliminate guns, then the logical conclusion would be to take guns away from police officers. And I don't think we're going to do that. So we need to stop working in this realm of theory and giving these what-if scenarios and deal with reality. Gun owners are some of the most responsible people. If you look at the statistics, they don't commit crimes as much as the general population. So don't demonize gun owners as being these menaces to society.
Assemblywoman Saldana on that?
Well, the case has just started. Whether or not the officer acted inappropriately or thought he was reaching for a taser when in fact he pulled out a handgun, all of that is being sorted out currently. But it does indicate when the adrenaline is flowing, when tensions run high, even trained law enforcement officers make mistakes in the heat of the moment. And so, again, going back to why in the world would someone want to carry a gun and put themselves and the people around them at risk for that type of situation to occur?
Ms. Arntzen, you had something to add?
I was going to say basically the same thing, but I also wanted to comment on the meetups as being political events. They very much are political events because these folks go out of their way to call the media, ask the media to come and cover them, and then try to provoke. The media then calls the Brady campaign and wants other groups to respond. But every single meetup that you've seen on television, the media have been called and asked to attend by these groups.
Mr. Shahab, did you have something to add to that?
I'm quite frankly, part of the education aspect of what we are doing as open carry advocates involves the media. Like I said, the first time I became aware that open carry was legal was through a media report. Now, obviously, a lot of people did not see that report. I didn't see that report until it was brought to my attention. So the fact that I'm contacting news media to cover our events is an effort to educate the public about what is legal and what is not legal, so we get fewer irrational calls to police departments to deal with non-situations. You know, people acting in a completely legal manner. There's absolutely no reason to dispatch a police officer to a situation like that.
All right. Mr. Chang, you've been bringing out a lot of statistics tonight. I see you have a copy of John Lott's More Guns, Less Crime, which has been a somewhat controversial book over the years.
Yes.
Some people swear by it. Some people swear at it.
Yes.
We've got questions from the audience on both sides of this. So I've got a question that asks, what about all the crimes avoided without a shot fired that are never reported and therefore not available for study? Another person said, how do you know that crimes were avoided by this? Aren't the statistics a little bit soft on this? Aren't they somewhat susceptible to interpretation?
Not at all. You know, the federal government has conducted its own study about the defense of gun use. According to the National Institute of Justice, this is actually a study conducted during the very anti-gun Clinton administration years. So basically, the NIJ found that there are at least 1.5 million defensive guns uses per year in this country. Okay, averaged out over the number of days in a year, that's 365. Okay, that's 4,109 defensive gun uses every single day across this entire country. It's a very, very common occurrence. Okay, and according to most defensive gun uses, John Lott has found in his book that 98% of all gun uses involve no firing of the weapon whatsoever. A mere showing of the firearm is enough to deter the violent crime.
Ms. Arntzen.
The Brady campaign has completely debunked John Lott. So I would encourage everybody to go to the Brady campaign's website, and you can read studies until you're blue in the face. But also the Legal Community Against Violence has numerous studies on their site, and it shows that much of what is claimed to be self-defense is actually criminal use. In one study, after individuals were asked to provide detailed descriptions of their defensive gun use, a group of criminal court judges anonymously responded, reviewed it, and said that at least half of the incidents described were probably illegal. So, you know, they have carte blanche to use the gun and then call them, as this one person I cited in Milwaukee, shot two people, open carry advocate, called in the police, turned himself in, said it was self-defense. Nobody videotaped him. No accountability. The people who could say otherwise are dead. Their families have no recourse, no agency to sue, no police department to take it to, nothing, no accountability.
Mr. Chang, a brief rebuttal.
John Lott's book has not been debunked by the Brady campaign. Okay, it is clearly, he has spent half the book actually debunking their criticisms of his campaign. Half the book. Okay. As far as the Milwaukee incident goes, I'm curious, Ms. Arnson, are you trying to try the case here during the debate, or does this man deserve his day in court? I mean, aren't we all presumed innocent until proven guilty? Is this the court case? Are we about to accuse him of doing something wrong, despite the fact that he's not even sitting here in front of us?
To the Assemblywoman. A very blunt and simple question.
I'm avoiding the sun here. I'll try to look at
sorry,
you. There
sorry,
sorry.
Do you own a gun? How do you propose the members of the public protect themselves?
Mm-hmm. Well, I grew up in a household where there were weapons. It was my father was a career Marine, and so I have done some gun training, and I have, as part of the research on this bill, visited with this California Highway Patrol, went out to their firing range, had them walk me through what they were dealing with when they confront somebody carrying a handgun. And so I appreciate the information that people provide, and that is the purpose of legislative hearings. It really is about listening as much as drafting and authoring bills. It is learning from people on all sides of the issue, and clearly there are many opinions, much research, much case law, and legal opinions related to guns. So this is not a simple issue, and I have been talking with many people, educating myself about this. I'm not intimidated by guns. As I said, I grew up in a military household. It was a fact of life. There are many people who use guns professionally. I admire them for doing the training and being responsible for taking on law enforcement and putting their lives on the line for other people. But I think that this is a serious issue, and I have given it very serious thought.
All right. An amalgamation of questions. This seems to be about a lot of fear on both sides. We have questions. A question to Ms. Arnson: why do you fear law-abiding citizens? Do you believe in innocent and proven guilty? We have questions to the two gentlemen asking, why are you afraid to be out in public without a gun on your hip? How do we reconcile that fear to have a discussion like this in a constructive public policy building sort of way? Mr. Shahab.
From my point of view, I'm not afraid to be in public without a firearm. I do believe that it is a tool at my disposal if necessary. Much as I drive a car, I know every time I drive a car, there's a very good chance that, or there is a chance that I can get into an accident. That's why I take precautions. I put on a seatbelt. I check my blind spots when I change lanes. So just because you do something doesn't mean that you're afraid of it. Every time I put on a seatbelt doesn't mean I'm afraid I'm going to get in a car accident. It's just a smart precaution to take. So that's why I do it.
Ms. Arnson.
I think we have to look at this as it's a clash of rights. When one person's rights jeopardizes another person. I think there's an old saying that the right to swing your fist ends at the tip of my nose. The right to smoke your cigarette ends in my breathable airspace. The right for you to carry a lethal weapon that could possibly put somebody at risk ends, as far as I'm concerned, at your front door. So it's a clash of rights. I think a discussion like this is very healthy. And these ideas need to come out so that people can judge for themselves. But the Brady campaign is concerned. Our members have had their children shot and killed. We're not joining this movement, you know, because we have nothing better to do. They've lost family members from unintentional shootings. Kids have shot their best friend because they didn't know there was a bullet in their dad's the gun's chamber. So we're operating off of horrible, horrible, tragic experiences. That's what we bring to the table, people who have suffered the fallout of the misuse of guns. Carrying them around in public is a political statement. It's a political act. It's an act of intimidation. It maybe makes you feel safer and more macho, but it does not make the community feel that way. And the community has the right to feel safe.
Mr. Chang?
I would echo Adnan's own sentiment about, why I generally carry when I go outside. I'm not somebody who feels necessarily unsafe when I don't carry a gun, but I would like to exercise my right, and I would certainly like to defend anybody else's right to, carry a gun in a public setting, just as long as they are a law-abiding citizen. You know, it is their right, their Second Amendment right to do so, and even if I would choose never to do so again for the rest of my life, I would still very much like to defend someone else's, personal choice in that matter.
Assemblywoman, on both that question and as somebody from the audience observes, you didn't answer the question specifically on personal gun ownership. Do you own a firearm?
Right? I do not own a firearm.
And your thoughts on this clash of rights and the question of who fears who and why?
Well, I think that the most important self-defense tool that any of us have is our brain and our ability to recognize a potentially dangerous situation, our ability to respond appropriately. And again, what we tell children is if you see a gun, report it to the nearest adult. And so when we see people carrying guns in public, I think there are many people of all ages that think the responsible thing to do is report that to a responsible adult, to law enforcement. So going back to my initial premise, this is putting a burden on law enforcement at a time when our resources are stretched to the limit. And I would love to think that everyone displaying a gun is doing so legally, responsibly, with training. But currently, under the current situation, we have no way to verify that.
Unfortunately, we've reached the point in our program where we would like to have some very brief closing statements. Excuse me. Starting with the Assemblywoman, what have you heard from Governor Schwarzenegger's office about what he might do if this reaches his desk?
Well, the governor is very responsive to law enforcement. I've mentioned we have law enforcement from throughout California that are supporting this bill. We are continuing with the legislative hearings, and I think he will be open to signing this bill as long as he continues to get a positive response from law enforcement representatives.
Mr. Shahab, in closing.
Well, I just want to thank everyone for coming out today, and I especially want to thank Ms. Saldana. Oh, sorry, Assemblywoman Saldana. I don't want to be yelled at over here. I just want to, she didn't bring a bulletproof vest like she wore to the Public Safety Committee in the Assembly, which, it's a little bit of a relief. But I did notice that when she got here, she has a little bit of a security detail surrounding her. As a normal law-abiding citizen, I don't have a security detail that follows me where I go places. If I ever get put in jeopardy, I have to rely on myself and the people in the immediate vicinity. Even if I do place a call to law enforcement, especially with the budget cuts that are going on these days, I don't know how long it's going to take until the law enforcement shows up. God forbid, I might be dead by the time they do. So it must be nice to live in your wonderful fantasy land, but out here, the normal people, we have to rely on ourselves and reality and having tools available to defend ourselves.
Ms. Arnson, in closing.
Good luck in reaching that.
I think that there's been comments about, the paranoia starts to bubble up about you're trying to ban guns, you're trying to ban our guns, why don't you just take away all guns? Well, nobody's trying to ban cigarettes, but cigarettes are regulated. Your car is well regulated. Many things in society are regulated to keep the community safe. I just want to go back to the accountability issue. If we look at this philosophically, to get a perspective, what the investment that we put in law enforcement, what we make them go through to have the right to carry a lethal weapon in society, what they have to go through to get hired. We have a standard that's way up here, and we do that just to make sure that they get it right. The BART shooting is an example of the consequences on this.
All right, Ms. Sorensen, and Mr. Chang, very briefly in closing.
The latest Brady campaign report card released on February 28, 2010, basically compared two states, California against Utah. California got the highest score, 79, and Utah got the lowest grade ever, 0. Okay, but if you take a look at the FBI's UCR report, it would very clearly establish that the violent crime rate in California is 503.8 per 100,000, and in Utah it's less than half of that, 221.8 per 100,000. It goes to show you that more gun control does not mean less crime.
Thank you very much. Thank you to all of our panelists. Chow Chang, Press Secretary for the Responsible Citizens of California. Karen Arntzen, California Chapter Services Coordinator for the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Adnan Shahab, Republican candidate for State Assembly and open carry advocate, and Assemblywoman Lori Saldana, author of Assembly Bill 1934. We also thank our audiences here and on radio, television, and the Internet. I'm Josh Richman, politics and legal affairs reporter for the Oakland Tribune and Bay Area News Group. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know, is adjourned.